go-to coach in the modern legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me, the world general himself, Michael Matheson. How are you?
I'm feeling okay. How about you?
Honestly, very tired. My girls are going through this thing where, like, one of them will, like, get into bed with the other one. Usually my youngest will get into bed with my oldest one. And it'll be fine for, like, 2 hours, 3 hours, and eventually one of them will start moving, they'll kick the other one, they'll start kicking back, and then eventually they're up and in our room. So it's been a rough, like, week and a half, 2 weeks. But it's, I'd like to say it's getting better. It's not, but it is one of those things I know I have to deal with for an extended period of time, so I'm trying to come to terms with it.
So you would think, like, if every night it ends poorly, that they would just stop doing it.
Well, yeah, but I think the youngest one just, like, almost like a homing beacon, just goes up. Like, I don't know how to explain it. She just literally will, like, be, like, half awake and just crawl up and then, like, settle herself down. Like, I think it's part, like, comfort and then also part just, like, this is what we do when we wake up now. Like, kind of just a habit now. So, we thought at least that it was... that she really liked her sister's, she's like the Squishmallows, I think they're called.
Those things are adorable.
They're very cute. And we have a number of them. And my daughter has, like, a very large one. I don't think they come in sizes, but, like, if this was a drink, this would be, like, that mega gulp where you're like, ooh, why would you have that? Who's that for? And you're like, oh, it's for a child. Okay, cool. So she loves it, and, you know, both of my girls love it, but my youngest is, like, the perfect size where she'll, like, nestle inside of it. So we think that's what she really is going after. So my oldest is over at her grandparents' tonight, so we're going to test the theory, put the large one on her bed, and see if she will stay in her bed this time. So, optimistic.
I believe in her.
I don't, but... She just, like, generally wreaks havoc on stuff, so, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if she, like, woke up, tore to shreds, and then got into her sister's bed anyways. I put nothing past her at this point.
Okay, that's fair, I guess.
It's good to have faith in your children. It's also good to be realistic, and, you know, some kids will never be astronauts, some kids will never, you know, become president. Most kids actually don't become president. Fun fact. My daughter is a menace to society, so I'm just trying to roll with the punches. And I think by the time she turns 18 and I am not legally responsible for her, I'll have come to terms with that.
You're sounding like a very loving dad. Anyways, why don't we continue with the Billy talk? How you played in an event this weekend. How was that?
I ended up playing at... A Bonfire, which is, besides being a dope Childish Gambino song, was a pretty good tournament. I mean, not for me personally. Like, I've been working a lot with people from the Westchester area, working on playing CEDH, and trying to make sure that we kind of get the mechanics down, things like that. A lot of the situations where you end up winning games are the ones where you kind of pick your spot. There's a lot of powerful cards. Everybody has them. There's free counter spells. There's a lot of tutors. So the format can be really consistent in terms of putting together a win. But also in the same way, everyone's got Force of Wills and Fierce Guardianships and Deflecting Swats and things like that. So Mind Break Trap, another popular one now. So it's really hard to actually have your win and put it into play without your opponent messing around with it. So you really have to be very strategic about how you play the game, both in terms of, like, communication with your opponent, opponents, and also navigating those win attempts. So, you know, we've been trying to work on that. I think that's my big thing, is I will just jam the win con, whatever I'm trying to do, as quickly as possible. And obviously there's some times where that works and sometimes, most times, where it doesn't. So I've been working on slowing down my pace of play. In terms of trying to overdo it. try to like accrue more cards and things like that. And it's been working in general. The event didn't go particularly well for me, but I did put together a number of win attempts. I literally had a win on the board, and I don't know, you might actually disagree with me, so I actually do want to explain this to you. I want to see what you think. But I ended up not winning a game, just like with the one draw, I think, at the end of the event. So, interesting. Three players left in the game. I cast a Windfall for 7 with my Orcish Bowmaster out, and was able to eliminate... I could have eliminated either one player or two players. One from a high life total or two from a low life total. There is a Grafdigger's Cage on the battlefield. I don't want the player with the large life total to be able to get the turn next with a full 7 full 7 cards and no cage. So I elect to eliminate the one player who was threatening to, like the Magda player, threatening to combo at any point. I put the person with the cage down to 1. They were playing Tivit, which is like a very popular card right now, the Seller of Secrets. And then I put the Kinnan player, Kinnan Bonder Prodigy, right? Big Aquaria card. I put that player down to, we'll say 7, just to keep it relevant for the story. They, on their turn, don't really do much. They draw a card. I have my Bowmaster still. I ping them for 1. The Tivit player, on their turn, looks at their hand and is like, okay, I don't think I have it now, but if I can draw a card, I can probably win this game. So they crack a clue. They draw a card. They say, crack my clue, draw a card. I'm like, cool. Trigger. You're dead. And they say, what? Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, in that case... And then the judge calls time. So for those who don't know, right now they're trying to work out like how time works in CEDH. And they've worked with a couple different variations of it. Sometimes it's a full turn cycle. Sometimes it's one less turn than people left in the game. But regardless, the one they're kind of working on right now is you get 75 minutes for the round, which seems like a long time, but obviously some of these turns will take 15, 20 minutes. 75 minutes for the round, and then no extra turns. Match is done. We finish that turn, and we're finished. So in this situation, the next player would have been me. I have lethal. It's already, it's on the stack, essentially. But... Because he didn't say, oh gosh, I'm dead, oh man, and put his cards down or whatever, I didn't get the next turn, active player with him, so the game just ended with him dying and the game ended up in a draw. If I get the turn, I 100% win. I've got a number of cards, battlefield's clear, my opponent doesn't have mana to activate their kitten, and more importantly, I have a Vial Smasher in play by Smasher the Fierce, and I've got a Niv-Mizzet, the 6th drop, the Incomparable One, Perun. So I can just cast that, and my opponent is only at 5 at this point. They will die to just the Vial Smasher trigger. I feel like I should have gotten the turn, but I also don't know if that's just like results-based thinking, or... if I actually should have gotten the turn, because I put lethal on the stack, they acknowledged it, realized they messed up, and then while they're trying to come to terms with the idea that they're dead, time was called and the match ended. I don't know what you think about this, just as coming from a judge and a competitive player yourself.
So I don't know that there's like a definitive answer. I have had it where it's like, oh, like you haven't untapped, you haven't you haven't started your turn. And I think that's reasonable. I've also heard there was clearly a motion to end the previous turn. Like that turn is done. It doesn't matter that we haven't physically started the actions. Like it's clearly the next turn. I think I would lean towards you get the turn because that player is dead. It's just taking them a minute to, like, say something. Now then, if that player is like, well, like, I have responses, this is what I would... Mm-hmm. Then it's like, okay, like, then that's, you know, a different story. But assuming nothing was going to be put on the stack, just like, we're moving on to the next turn, is kind of where I would land. I don't know, I think they'll... It's like an awkward thing. That being said, just as a person, and I think a lot of people will not believe me, but I think you would vouch for me. If I am those players, I am just arguing that you should get the win, because like, it's very clear. Like, if it's clear you win, like, I don't care. You know, I don't want to win on technicalities if I can help it. Like, if it's the difference between, you know, $50,000 and $100,000, I'm probably not sticking to my morals. I'll be honest. Something like this where, I don't know, what was first place?
$500 or something like that.
No shot do I care that much. Like, I am here for a good time. Realistically, I think you're winning this game. Therefore, you have won this game. And, like, I've conceded in similar spots where it's like, okay, I'm not dead, but, like, I'm, like, 1% to win this game. Like, I've conceded in those spots in opens and GPs. Like, I just, that, you know, that's not what I'm here for. Again, you know, I'm human. There's probably a point where, like, my morals will be bought out. But at, you know, if we're talking less than $1,000, probably not it. I'd probably just go for the better experience for everyone.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt, too. It's actually funny you said that, too. The two players who were left in the game wanted to draw. The person who got eliminated was like, yeah, you definitely just win here. So, but the other two were like, nope, we're not going to agree to that. It's like, sure.
It's like, I get it. Like, I get you want the win, but it's like, is that really, like, do you really feel like you won that game? If I don't feel like I won the game, then, you know, I didn't. Like, if I'm not convinced you're going to win, then no, I'm not giving it to you just because you're slightly ahead. But if it's like, okay, there's legitimately nothing I can do, like, I don't know, that sucks. I should have done different things, and you win.
Yeah, plus, like, this was the one player was, like, asking for a draw. It's like, oh, we should just draw. Like, we got, like, 2 minutes left, we should just draw. It's like, no, I'd rather, I think I can win. Let's play. And then we ended up, like, that little discussion there was the thing that pushed us into a draw. And that also kind of makes it, like, super sour. But there's no perfect answer, and I know that, too. And I think that's really interesting about the CEDH scene right now, right? I guess, fair. The Mind Sculptors, which is a really good CEDH podcast, if you haven't listened to them, Callahan and Ian, comedian, both do a really good job on that show, so I'd just give them a shout out. But they were talking about the fact that, and I think this is, I'm not sure actually what your thoughts on this are, the Magic tournament rules are basically explicitly written for single-player events, right? 1v1. There are obviously some things that have been made for Two-Headed Giant, right? That was at some point a GP format, that was a pro PTQ format, things like that. But there's really nothing for four-player free-for-all in terms of rules, anything like that. And a lot of the rules that they have been developing are more community-minded rules and addendums, right? They're not actually, like, official Matt Haback stamp of approval rules. They're just things that we're kind of working with as we go along, which is part of the reason why we have this kind of discussion about how long does a round take? You know, what's the procedure if someone comes in late? Are we upgrading this warning to a game loss in this situation, or are we just going to keep it as a warning? Like, these things really should be ironed out, but they're not, because it's not a format that Wizards have had to engage with themselves.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, I think Wizards would make the document, but also they're not running QDH or CDH events, so, like, I don't see it happening. Although, I think they run them at MagicCons. I mean, not CDH, but, like, so, I mean, I guess those aren't tournaments, so it's a little bit different. It would be nice if there were rules, but There's not. So, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting seeing it. Like, there was a CDH event at Eternal Weekend last year. I know SCG has kind of hopped on the train there. So, like, I feel like it's something that Wizards aware that they probably should address at some point, but we just haven't gotten there yet. But I'm sure in the next year or 2 years, right, if Wizards is going to continue pushing the idea that Magic is Commander, Commander is Magic, they are one of the same, it's the on-ramp for a lot of people, I think they'll eventually maybe go down that road. But yeah, you're right. It's, I guess at this point, there's really nothing else to say about it.
Two things I mean, I want to move on from CDH, but two things I want to say while we're still on this topic. One, you're talking about SCG picking it up. I really wish that they would consider doing it on Friday. They've also just added Lorcana to their events. And, like, I was looking at Pittsburgh, and because I'm planning to go. I still need to finish booking and everything. But, you know, I want to battle in Pittsburgh. It's very close to home, and it's modern and legacy, and I like those formats. But my thing is, like, they added Lorcana, which I would enjoy playing. They have CDH, which I would enjoy playing. And both of these events are on Saturday, which is also when, like, the Modern 10K is. And, like, maybe this is a personal failing. I basically always want to play in the main event. I don't care that much. I just want to play in that. Like, I don't know. And which feels like a weird thing to say after I just said, like, oh, like, I don't care. I would give away the win. But... Anyways, I really wish I could go and, like, play in multiple of these things. And it just, like, I was looking at Friday, so I was like, do I take off work Friday? Like, do I drive up Thursday and, like, play Friday? It's like, yeah, I probably would enjoy playing pre-releases. I would definitely enjoy playing pre-releases on Friday. But it's just, like, it'd be nice if there was more of an incentive to show up and do other things. Because, like, you know, I think it would be really cool if my day was 10 o'clock Friday, or my weekend was, like, 10 a.m. Friday, play Lorcana event, after it's done, do a draft, Saturday, play Modern, Sunday, play Legacy. Like, that's actually a sick weekend. Or same thing, if it's Friday, CDH, warm up the old competitive mindsets, and then, you know, Saturday and Sunday are my 10K and 5K, but, like... So, anyways, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling, but I'm just bummed that they overlap all their events, and it's like, okay, like, I'm gonna play Modern and I'm gonna enjoy myself. I love Modern, but, like, you know, even if I don't like CDH as much, like, I still like it, so it'd be nice if I had opportunities to do both instead of having to pick one. And it would also, like, I think their numbers would look better if you don't have people like me who are like, okay, well, I can't do both, so I guess I have to pick.
Yeah, and, like, Brian Koval, I'm trying to think what event this actually was. I want to say it was Baltimore, but maybe it was one before that. You know, it was, like, literally in the same position. It's like, I am probably would do really well in the CDH event, but, you know, I'm playing Legacy because it's the main event, and I want to play Legacy, so let me do this, I guess. And, of course, he won the event, but, like, so I guess he chose right.
Yeah, but he would have won, like, CDH too, so it's fine.
He probably would have. Yeah, like, I don't know, and that's the thing too. I know people like to think about, like, oh, well, we've got this for the Commander players, we've got this for the Legacy players, this for the Modern players, and this for those cheeky Pioneer players, let's do this. It's like, what if I like to play a little bit of everything? Like, if I took one thing away from the Owl House, it was that it's okay to like a little bit of everything. You don't have to be in, like, one definitive track, and it's weird to think that even after all this time, we still, like, you know, have all these events that only overlap perfectly. If you are, you know, a Modern player, you can do all the Modern, what are the Modern challenges or whatever they are, the 3-round events that they do.
Yeah, the trials, which, you know, if I was there on Friday, I would do, but that's not, like, I'm not going to show up just to do that. Because with those events, it's like, if you get anything other than undefeated, it's feels kind of disappointing. So,
yep.
Rather go to my job.
I do want to go to this event, though. I've been really enjoying CEDH. I obviously continue to love playing Legacy, so that's kind of where I'm thinking. Maybe do that a CEDH on Saturday and then play Legacy on Sunday. Okay. Skip the modern event, which would be weird, but like
blasphemy.
I've been getting ranched in, okay, in modern. I have not found anything I'm super happy with, so I don't really want to continue just jamming Murktide and my one drop, one toughness creatures in modern right now.
So that kind of transitions me to the other point I was going to bring up. So you're saying, you know, you were getting destroyed in modern, but you also got destroyed at the CDH event. Have you considered that you're washed?
It's possible. It really is, honestly. No, I mean, like, I was putting a lot of effort in, and I put in a lot of good effort in the games, so it is partially, I feel like, a matter of me still, like, tuning, because, like, even I had, the situation twice, which has never happened to me before, where I was like, okay, cool, I just fetch for a land, and then I can cast a spell. Well, used all my fetchable land, so I've got nothing. All right, well, never mind. So I lost two games like that. Put myself in a situation where, like, I could not, I would have been able to have a major impact on the turn, and instead I couldn't do anything. It's one of those things where, like, I'm still, like, working on the deck, I'm still making small changes, and maybe that, you know, it's something I need to improve upon, like, my deck building or whatnot, but, and this feels really bad, too. I'm not playing enough, I feel like, especially in modern, right? I think right now I've been playing so much Legacy. I actually feel very good in Legacy just in general, which is why I want to play the Legacy event on Sunday. The thing is, in modern, I just have not been super interested in playing the format. Obviously, there are some decks that are really cool. I've been playing a deck here and there just to check in with the format, make sure I'm still well-versed, right? Obviously, for the show, we have to make sure we're doing stuff, but also just making sure I understand, like, get a feel for the format and see, you know, are people really going bean crazy, all this fun stuff. And now that I'm, like, playing the format a little bit, I'm playing the Yawgmoth deck, not Yawgmoth, the mono-green, what's it called? Artifact deck.
Hardened Scales.
Hardened Scales, thank you. I'm playing that deck right now in a league. You know, I get a feel for the format, I see how it is, but, like, I really just want to jam Murktide. Murktide's not good, so I'm probably not going to play that. I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about the format right now. So I think if I'm playing a format that I'm actually well-versed in, and I don't get screwed by variants, I think I'm okay, but I don't know. I could be washed, honestly. This could be it. I could be over the hill.
Think you're washed. So it's funny. You mentioned Yawgmoth and you mentioned Hardened Scales. I want to try both of those decks. I was saying, I was like, I want to buy Agatha's Soul Cauldrons. Mm-hmm. And then I also need to buy a deck to play with it. Because none of the decks I play that card at all. But that card is super cool. I'm just like watching these Yawgmoth screenshots get posted. And I'm so jealous. I am at Modern last night. I was like so close to being like, Harley, do you have Yawgmoth on you? Can I play it? I played Titan Shift instead, but you know, I do want to try out the old Yawgmoth deck. It feels like the kind of deck I should be good at, but when I've played it, I've been garbage. But you know, I think I have to put in some effort. I think there's no way around it anymore. I just think the deck's really cool. And also, whenever I play against it, I just, like, am so frustrated because I have no clue what they're going to do. Like, I think my record against it is still positive, but it's just, like, I take an absurd amount of time trying to figure out what's possible. And, like, you know, my opponent should just, like, start calling me out on it. So, yeah, I want to put in some work there.
Yeah, I think that deck is... It's very, very powerful. And once again, we talked about Harley, who was on episode 97, not 57. I don't know who said that last week. That was weird. So that's embarrassing. So he was on 97. But Harley was playing the deck and, you know, playing it at a high level. And I was like, okay, this is just difficult to interact with. The Soul Cauldron makes a lot of sense in that deck. Besides the fact giving your creatures +1/+1 counters. being able to actually get the activated abilities from Grist. Like, there's a lot of, like, gross stuff that happens with that. With the Hardened Scales deck, it's in a similar boat. I think it ends up doing something a little different, where, like, the +1/+1 counters are more free-flowing, but you have less activated abilities. Like, you could activate, like, Zabaz if you want to, but, like, who's trying to destroy their artifact necessarily?
Yeah, but all your stuff becoming Walking Ballista is sick.
All your things becoming Walking Ballista is sick. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, you just have +1/+1 counters. Like, the... I forget what it's called. The 2-drop that has Ward 2.
Patchwork Automaton.
Yes. Patchwork Automaton. End up, like, randomly having, I think, like, 7 +1/+1 counters in 2 turns. Like, I cast a spell and then put counters on it, and suddenly it just has 7 counters, and then I beat my opponent's faith in for 2 turns, and like that's without the Soul Cauldron giving it that ability. I had another turn too where the Soul Cauldron exiled my Arcbound Ravager, and I was like, well, I can't lose now. Like, the game has now ended. Everyone pack up, go home. And it just feels like it's the same thing with Yawgmoth, where it's just like, once I have this ability now, how are you supposed to interact with me profitably? Like, your lightning bolts don't do anything. Your fatal push looks really silly. Like, you're trying to set up a solitude, and I'm already getting rid of the target. Like, it's just so, so effective. And, you know, the more I'm playing with the deck, and I've only done 2 games. I mean, but just I felt like I was, like, clowning my opponent, which felt really good.
Yeah. Hardened Scales is, like, this interesting deck to me, because I feel like every time I see it get brought out, somebody's like, what year is this? And it's like, yeah, I get the deck's fallen off, but like the Ozolith, I think, was a huge upgrade. And then it was like, you know, I would see people play the deck and they'd be like, oh yeah, I randomly spiked this like RCQ with the deck. I don't think it's good, but you know, it worked out. And it'd be like, oh, just top 8 at the challenge with the deck. I don't think it's good, but it worked out. And I'm like, how many times can I see that? Until it's like, maybe this is real. And then, you know, Agatha's Soul Cauldron got printed, and I think that card is very good. And, like, I think an underrated piece of that card is also that you get to play main deck Graveyard Hate. And it's, you know, it's not great Graveyard Hate. Like, I'm not, like, exiling one card a turn against Living End is not going to win you the game, necessarily. But just having another kind of, I don't want to say free, but essentially free piece of interaction against, like, Murktide with their, you know, with their Delirium spells. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or against, like, your opponent who's probably going to try to Renin 6, like, Besager Loop you. You know, you might lose your Cauldron in the process, but at least you're not losing your entire board. So that's nice. I don't know. Card's really good. So we've mentioned these 2 decks. What do you think is the best Soul Cauldron deck, if you had to guess? I understand you haven't played that much with or against it yet.
I mean, I think out of the 2 of them, I think it has to be Yawgmoth, just because...
But do you think it's one of those 2, or do you think it could be something else?
It probably isn't one of those 2, but I'm not sure how many things you would need, because, like, once again, I think they both do different things, right? Like I said, the Yawgmoth deck has so many activated abilities, but doesn't naturally give the creatures +1/+1 counters outside of, like, the Stranglegeist and Young Wolf. And then the other deck doesn't really have activated abilities, but has so many +1/+1 counters that when you do exile, like you said, the Walking Ballista, it's insane. So, or the Arcbound Ravager, or whatever. So, there has to be another artifact or activated ability that is a very high impact thing that would be just insane to have and play. And like, but I keep thinking about like these weird ones, like Gigantomancer. Do you remember that card?
I do. I feel like you brought this up last week.
I think I did. So like there, once again, it's an 8-drop 1/1. It pay 1 to give a creature, I think make it into like a 7/7 or something like that. Like that effect is obviously insane, but like the card is awful. So there has to be some card like that would be very good. However, you don't want to do that. I think looking at the cards we currently have, I think playing something like like Emery, I think would be really good with Soul Cauldron, right? Emery actually gets back the Soul Cauldron. It's an activated ability, so if you mill a second Soul Cauldron or a second Emery, you can exile that, and then you can put +1/+1 counters on your other creatures, like a Psy token, Thopter token, and then that way the Psy then can also buy back other artifacts. Like, that seems like a really good engine that you could kind of build around. I'm trying to think of what other cards like that help develop themselves, because that's one of the big benefits of the Grist engine, right? Like, I think when you exile Grist, you are able to mill more cards, which gets you more activated abilities, which makes your subsequent turns that much better. And if everything's getting the ability to, you know, +1 make an insect, or, you know, -2 kill this creature, like, it's just really hard for your opponent to ever catch up. So that's kind of what I'm trying to find. Like, what would that card be that allows itself to continue to snowball?
Yeah, it's a good question. For where I am, I think Yawgmoth is probably the best deck with it, because I think Yawgmoth is also just, like, a good deck without it. Because, you want to make sure, like, you brought up Gigantomancer, but I don't think you want to just, like, put crappy cards in your deck. But there's so many options. Like, a friend of ours who I mentioned recently, Mark, has been he's been playing Heliod with it, and he said it's nuts there. I know he just, like, top 8-ed in RCQ this past weekend with it, and it does seem really good there. Again, it's another Walking Ballista deck. You get counters with Spike Feeder. You can exile your Heliod. Like, there's a lot of things you can do with it in that deck. I've seen people talk about it in Devoted Druid, where it doesn't seem quite as good to me. I know Spider Space has been playing, like, Agorio's Vengeance Asmo deck with it. And I'm really interested in trying that. Because I think that actually has a lot going for it, right? Like, Cookbook already lets you pitch your thing. Like, so you get to, you know, maybe discard your Gristlebrand. And it's good because you were trying to do that anyways for Goryeo's Vengeance. But if you don't have Goryeo's Vengeance, then you can just exile it and draw 7 cards. And you're still probably in a good spot. Yes, you miss out on the 7/7 lifelink, but, like, if you draw 7 cards in your combo deck on, like, turn 2 or turn 3, okay. Like, yeah, you're going to live, hopefully. But there's just so much going on with that card. I've also seen it. I've seen Hardened Scales get played in Legacy with the card, which, you know, does say good things about that deck. I think getting to add Gaia's Cradle to Hardened Scales, or getting to add, like, Ancient Tomb and City of Traitors is, like, very unreasonably strong. But yeah, I'm very interested to brew around with that card. I kind of hate when cards like this come out, because I have to be an adult and go to work, and I don't want to be an adult. I just want to sit on Modo and spend hours, like, playing a variety of decks until I know which one I like.
Yeah. Because you're right. Like, there's definitely a bunch of different iterations I could imagine being successful. One of them is right, and one of them is not. And, like, you know, we talked about this on the show a while ago, but, like, I have that Cissé deck, right? The Cissé Weatherlight Captain. And in that deck, believe it or not, with all the activated abilities, it's very good. Even just for the fact that, like, you can activate Cissé without having to pay the weird mana requirement, right? You just pay 5 generic and you're good to go. Which also makes that card so much better now. So, like, it's very possible that it's a deck like that, right? A deck that you are more focused on the ability to activate things without some absurd cost that can be generic, and now you're able to convert your oddly specific mana into generic mana that allows you to activate, and maybe that allows you to loop. But once again, I'm not sure off the top of my head, like, what that card could possibly be. Like, I don't know if you can think of anything that, like, you know, is tapped for, like, 3 red, but needs, like, or, like, taps for, yeah, like, taps for, like, 3 generic, but, like, untapped for, like, double blue or something like that.
Wait, say again what you need.
Okay, so, like, I'm trying to think of the card.
So you need something to untap.
Horseshoe Crab, okay. Yeah, so, like, Horseshoe Crab, right? Horseshoe Crab and Palladium Mirror. The Horseshoe Crab has the activated ability for it to untap for a blue. The Palladium Mirror taps for two generic. Mm-hmm. So if I have the Agatha's Cauldron out, I can just pay the tap for two. I can activate the Horseshoe Crab ability for one generic instead, and now I can just tap again for two and make infinite mana. So, like, that's a combo that exists. And, I mean, you're playing Horseshoe Crab and Palladium Mirror, so maybe that's not the exact effect you want. But this could be something like, you know, you're playing Gigantha with the Horseshoe Crab. That would allow you to also do that. And, you know, now you have a bunch of different colored mana, but your colored mana doesn't need to be specific going into another card. But, you know, it still needs to be specific for actually casting spells or activating abilities. And that's kind of where I'm trying to think, like, what exactly would you want it to look like if you are focusing on that component of that card?
Yeah, I don't know. So, as much as I hate to talk about this format, I even saw an Agatha Soul Cauldron deck in Pioneer and thought to myself, that looks fun. And then I got mad at myself because I thought a Pioneer deck looked fun. But I want to play this card with the 4-drop, 2 green, blue, 2/4. I think it's a 2/4. That's Birthing Pod.
Yeah, Prime Speaker. No, not Prime Speaker, Zagana.
Xanaphar.
Xanaphar, yeah.
Is it Prime Speaker?
It's Prime Speaker Xanaphar, I'm pretty sure.
It's Xanaphar. It's definitely Xanaphar.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's Prime Speaker.
It is Prime Speaker. So I started saying Prime Speaker and was like, Zagana. No, that's not it. Okay, yeah, so.
Yeah.
It is Prime Speaker Xanaphar. Which is a deck that I have thought has to be closed in both Pioneer and Modern. And people always tell me, oh, you'll never untap with a 2/4. And it's like, well, I mean, if you do, you just win the game. And you can't tell me that you can never untap with it. It's like, you can't tell me you've never untapped with an Omnath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I've definitely untapped with an Omnath. Like, yes, I understand it dies to Fury. Yes, I understand it dies to Solitude. But again, the upside is win the game. And so if you can use this with Agatha's Soul Cauldron, then it's just like, everything, like, you can just turn a creature into a Birthing Pod at any time. Like, Fury is not even an answer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That seems good.
Yeah, that does seem good. And, like, if you start... The other thing about this, I guess, Xanaphar always, like, sacrifice another creature. And, like, sometimes you're like, well, I don't really want to sack this creature. I want to keep this one. Like, I like this one. It's like, Xanaphar sucks. I don't want Xanaphar anymore. Like, being able to actually pop that away seems really... really sweet. And I guess, like,
sack another creature.
Well, yeah. But if the other creature has the ability, then you can just sack the Xanaphar that you might have in play to pod that one up instead of potting away your 2-drop or something like that. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting things there. Like, this could be interesting. Like, and that is a really powerful ability too. Like, it's just not one that you would look at and be like, well, this isn't even worth the price of admission. Like, the fact that it's just a tap makes it so much more powerful than some of these other ones. And that's kind of going back to Emery, like, that's kind of one of the benefits there. Like, it does tap for free, but you need to be able to take advantage of that and have the mana to cast it, or you need to build your deck specifically so you don't have to worry about that cost. This one is another one I think that's really beneficial because you don't have a cost, right? The cost is the creature that you have in play. And you want to put creatures in your graveyard anyway, so that's perfect. Like, that actually seems like a really nice, potentially a very nice type package there. Okay. I'm trying to think what other... I mean, like, the other ones, too, that I'm thinking about, like, Kiki Jiki, obviously, right? We're just...
Yeah, Kiki, but, like, you don't want to put Kiki in your deck if you can help it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be a one-of. I guess it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, and you also do have... I guess, I guess it doesn't search for, what's the 2-drop that, open the grave? That doesn't specifically search for a legendary creature, right?
I don't know what that card is.
My brain says open the grave, but maybe I'm thinking of reaping the graves. Unmarked grave.
Unmarked grave is any card.
Is it any card?
Yeah, that's why you can get Archon.
Okay. Oh, no, it is search your library for a non-legendary card.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not so any specifically card.
Okay, so, like, that doesn't work on getting Kiki, but I mean, like, I guess you'd have to do, like, Entombor Exarch or something like that if you wanted to do Kiki Chiki. I'm sure there's another card. Like, I know, like...
You're putting bad cards in your deck again.
I know, and that's what I'm trying to, like, avoid putting the bad cards in the deck. That's, like, the issue. Like, you could put, like, those kind of, like, filler cards. Like Satyr Wayfinder comes to mind. It could also be, like, the Stitcher Supplier or something like that that's putting them in your graveyard, but isn't giving you, like, the exact cards that you want. It could be something like playing... going back to Pioneer, it could be something like Rafine's Informant or whatever, right? The ones with, that have that, I forget what it's called, the loot ability.
Connive.
Connive, yeah. You could have something like Connive, which I guess actually makes it possible for you to be playing the bird folk. My brain wants to call them...
Ledger Shredder?
Ledger Shredder, yes. I was literally about to call him Harvey Birdman. I was like, that's not right. But yeah, you could definitely play Ledger Shredder and Connive that way, too. I'm not sure if that's the card I really want to be playing right now. I still don't like that in a Bowmaster format, but the ability to actually just connive, I don't want to say on command, but reasonably, with a reasonable expectation, I think would actually be pretty good, especially if your plan is to turn on the Soul Cauldron. That actually even gives you the option to, unless I'm mistaken, you're able to activate it at instant speed. So, like, being able to suddenly give your... Actually, no, you know what? Actually, that's actually really nice. Because being able to give your creature an activated ability at instant speed would be really sweet. But even the Ledger Shredder itself, because it's conniving, if you discard, say, once again, Kiki Jiki, right? Now it's a legendary... Now it's getting that ability to activate at instant speed as well, and because you connived and discarded a non-land spell, now it already has a +1/+1 counter, so it puts less stress on that card to actually, you know, put 1/1 counters around, which is, once again, one of the issues I have with Yawgmoth in that aspect, so that's interesting.
Okay, so this was not the only card that had a heavy impact on Modern. Would you say that you are more excited about Soul Cauldron than you are the beans?
The beans? Okay, so the beans, I haven't gotten to play with it yet. And I will say that. I did see Ryan Freeburger over the weekend, which is really sweet. If you don't like watch the Legacy Pit, one, check them out. They're very, very, it's good to watch them play Legacy content. Which I always appreciate, and I've known Ryan. I think you've known Ryan too for like years at this point. So it was nice seeing him. He was actually playing the Rug Bean Delver list, and it looked really good. I mean, like being able to cast Force of Will and draw cards, I think is super sweet. I don't know if the deck's currently built correctly. That's a whole other discussion, I guess. Like, I've seen a lot of lists that have, like, you know, 3 or 4 copies of Lorien Revealed, which feels ambitious. But the deck overall, I think, has a really good core, so I'm very happy about that card. I don't know if you've noticed this, too, but it really only plays in certain decks. Like, obviously, it's very good in Delver, I think. Having Force of Will in your deck makes that really good. I've seen people playing, like, Misdirection as well, just because they want to take further advantage of the fact you have 5-drops. And even, like, Commandeer was another one I've seen people actually playing. It can be awkward at times. Once again, I think, especially in Legacy, like, having that card kind of can lock you out against opposing Bowmasters, which is a really weird thing to have, where, like, you cannot cast your Solitude, because if you do, you'll trigger your opponent's creatures and you won't be able to gain life in order to not die. Like, there are some weird corner cases, but in general, I think the beans are super powerful. It is a better effect than what you were getting with the Staff of the Storyteller. Obviously, different colors, but they're going in similar decks. I think that's a really good card. The only thing, though, is, like, the beans, I feel like, in Modern ends up being really narrow, right? Like, it needs to go in a deck. I think if you're planning on triggering it somewhat reliably, like, you're doing it off of Fury, you're doing it off of Solitude, you're doing it off of your whatever that enchantment removal is, like, that is kind of where the card draw is coming from, which is fine. Like, obviously, like, you can be focused in those decks, but we're talking about decks that are very high up the curve, very impactful, and didn't really need to have an engine to get card advantage back because they are themselves card advantage. So I don't like it so much in Modern. I think it fits in less decks. I think not triggering off a Force of Will specifically, I think, is a huge minus, but I do like the card. I personally would rather be playing Soul Cauldron just because of the effect it has on the game more than I would the Beans. I don't like cards like that which are, like, so cheap for the investment side, but then are just inevitability, I feel like, are not super fun for competitive play. I'm not sure how you feel about that, though.
I don't mind a good value entrant from time to time. I prefer Soul Cauldron, I think, because I am a Johnny. But I have not actually played up with Soul Cauldron yet, so I don't know. I could play with him and be like, I hate this. I doubt it. I have been a big Beans enjoyer, but similar to you, have not loved it in Modern. I haven't tried it in the four-color deck yet, though, and I know it has to be good there. Like, it can't be bad. Because one of the things is that deck does draw a lot of cards, but it also, I feel like, is constantly flooding out, and I think it can struggle in the early game. So, like, when you pitch too many, like, Furies and Solitudes early, it's hard to actually do things. So I think instantly recouping those cards has to be a big game. But, yeah, I definitely prefer Soul Cauldron. One thing I saw with the Beans that I've been enjoying is, and, like, one of my friends was doing this, I also saw somebody online doing this, playing it, like, in Rhinos. So, like, my friend was doing it in the sideboard as a juke, and then okay. I've also seen it just straight main deck, and it's like, okay, if you hit Beans, then you're happy. If you hit Rhinos, you're happy, which I don't love that, but, like, friend of ours, Dan, played it in an RCQ this past weekend. He played it at our weekly last night, where it was like, if you, like, you would sideboard out your Rhinos against people who bring in, like, all these Fluster Storms and Chalices, you get to bring out all these dead cards and just have cards that actually impact the game, and then you're just, like, going crazy drawing cards. And that actually, you know, you're playing kind of a somewhat clunky mid-range deck at that point, but that actually sounds pretty okay to me. I also have been enjoying its effect on the format because it's made the Titan Shift list feel pretty good. I'm just enjoying playing that. But I have, on the other hand, cast my share of Beanstalk so far in Legacy, and I'm a fan. I'm a big Beanstalk enjoyer. I tried it in Red Delver, and it was pretty good, and then I tried the blue-green, Elvish Reclaimer, Yavimaya, main deck Submerge list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I won't say that I have Submerges in the mail right now. and I won't say that I'm sleeping up this deck to play this weekend. But, you know.
Yeah.
Just, I might Submerge a few things.
Yeah, like, that's the, and once again, like, it's the free spells. Like, the Force of Will, the Submerge, even, like, and, like, obviously you can do this in Modern, too, but, like, the Hooting Mandrills for one mana, it's like, oh, yeah, Hooting Mandrills, one mana, I'll draw three cards. It's like, wait, what happened? Like, why are you playing Recall?
Yeah. So, a few things I have noticed about the deck is, like, the Dragon's Rage Channeler and the Reclaimer, depending on which version I was on, have felt a little bit underwhelming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of it's just, like, here's a 4-4, here's a 7-7, here's a 7-7, and they all cantrip versus, here is my 1-1 that might get slightly bigger as the game goes on. It's just like, you're not worried about the early game as much because you have so much inevitability. And, you know, I felt similarly with the blue-green deck, but I will also say I feel like I just was not drawing Reclaimers, so maybe if I drew them early, I would have felt different, and maybe it's a function of the kinds of hands I was keeping. But yeah, the one-drops were underwhelming. I will also say, though, you kind of need them, because otherwise you're like weak to Leyline of the Voids, but you know, those particular one-drops don't really make you less weak against Leyline of the Void. So I would be interested in trying some other threats. Like in the Rug deck, I would be interested in just like committing to the bigger bit and going with Minskin Boo. But then it's like doing that, your dazes get worse. And I really liked daze as a way of protecting your beans on too. So I don't know. I think there's work that can be done. I will also say Submerge felt real sick. Even though it's not always turned on, you draw so many cards that having something that's sometimes dead didn't feel bad. And I hate saying this, but at worst, it's a blue card that you can pitch to force a will game one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a relevant thing. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, and once again, I think when Submerge is good, it is insane. I think, you know, being able to put opposing Murktides back on top, I think even putting, like, your Goblin Welder back on top, I think it feels really good. Just as a huge tempo play that sometimes draws you a card.
Oh, can I tell you the sickest Submerge play I've had?
Please do.
So my opponent cast Show and Tell.
Okay.
I think we might have both cast a... I think I cast a Force of Will. My opponent countered. I had the ability to try to counter back. I had a Surgical in hand. So I Surgicaled Force of Will.
Okay.
And then I saw what they were going to put in. And it was very important to me that I knew what they were going to put in. So they were going to put in Atraxa. And I think their hand was like, they had something else in hand that was like kind of irrelevant. I keep blanking on what it was. So I let it resolve, put in a Murktide Regent with the Atraxa trigger on the stack, submerged. And then on my turn, cast a Murktide Regent, growing the one in play and attacking for lethal.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, it definitely, that is, I don't know, I think it opens up just so many different lines. And it's, I don't know if you actually, I wonder what your thoughts on this are. Like, have we seen in Modern, at least, like, the end of the bean decks? Like, are we, I feel like there has to be some kind of, like, Sultai bean list that should exist that we just haven't seen yet. I'm not sure what it is off the top of my head. I'm just spitballing here, but like you do have a lot of things like you know, a Tathagar here or there. Maybe it's a Gurmag Angler. I mean, obviously, just Murktide I think itself is fine too. But I think there's enough, you know, delve spells and things like that that you can go that route and be pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I think we'll see more. Like you said, I think there's probably something in the bug shell. You know, maybe get some Thought Scours in there to turbo it out, and then you know, play your Beanstalks, play your Delph creatures. But like, we just haven't seen Delph creatures plus beans in Modern yet, which is weird because it's like this is obviously the thing to do in Legacy, so it should be the thing to do in Modern as well. Another card you could see with it that I haven't seen is Allosaurus Rider, which, you know, we think of as a Neoform card, but it does cost 7 mana, so that is... I don't actually remember what that card's power and toughness are. I think it's Lackluster.
it's star slash star plus 1.
But what is it equal to? Is it, like, the number of lands?
The number of lands you haven't played.
So, yeah. You know, maybe not actually great to cheat that out, but, you know, it's an option for something. I've seen some playing it with Scion of Draco, but that's not a thing I've seen a lot of. So I wouldn't be surprised to see more Zoodax with it. You know, we talked about it with Bring the Light, I think, last week. That's something I would expect to see more of. That is one that I have seen people playing, but definitely not as much as I would expect. So, I don't think it's going to hit the same levels that we see it in Legacy, because you can't do some of the cute stuff like misdirection, but like you do have stuff like Commandeer, you do have the pitch elementals, and the card is very powerful. It seems too powerful that we it seems too powerful to only be contained in one shell, but I'm not entirely sure like what shells you would put it in Legacy, because I think there's just less cards that work with it, but that doesn't mean they don't exist and that they're not being overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only other one, like, in terms of, like, cost reducers that I've seen are, like, the affinity for artifacts. Like, I saw the one with Beans and, like, Mirror Enforcer. I know there's, like, the other better Mirror Enforcer now that has, like, artifact land cycling. But playing that alongside your Thoughtcast and your Thought Monitor, like, you just, like, go through your deck real quickly, especially when everything costs, you know, free, but somehow draws you a couple cards along the way.
Yeah, I have seen that. That looks really good to me, too. Man, I just had another idea in my head, and now I'm blanking on what it is, and now I'm sad. Why would you let me be sad?
Why would I do this? Yeah, I mean, like, and like, I'm trying to think, like, a lot of these are creature, like, focus, like the delve creatures, but I also feel like in Modern especially there should be some spells that we should be casting that are higher up the curve.
Like Karn Liberated out of Tron?
Like Karn Liberated out of Tron, yeah. Like something like that that is could be a little bit cheaper, but also like it makes sense to cast it at that point. Even like Reality Smasher, like that could be something that would make sense. You could kind of accelerate that out playing the temples, right? So that kind of makes sense to go down that route. Like, you can play Temple Forest, and that would allow you to cast the Beans on 2, cast Reality Smasher on 3, and draw a card. Obviously, I think any hand that has double Temple is probably pretty good, but, I mean, it's still something that I think you have to consider.
You could play it in Eggs, play Open the Vaults, and play... I guess that's actually the only thing that would trigger it. Never mind, ignore that.
Well, even like casting like the evoke spells, I think would be really cool. Like, you know, it could be something like Shriek Maw. Once again, just thinking Shriek Maw specifically because I like that card. But like, you know, I'm going to cast this for 2, but it also draws me a card now because it's technically a 5 drop. Like, that seems like an interesting avenue to kind of go down.
A lot to look into.
Actually, Allosaurus Rider actually is 1 plus the number of lands. So if you have no lands, it's still a 1/1.
Yeah, that's not exciting.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm going down a card to make a 3/3 one.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say you could also do something like... what is that card? They play it in Pioneer, the one that's like, you know, search for 3 monocolored cards, and your opponent lets you choose 2 of them to cast.
Emergent Ultimatum.
Yes, Emergent Ultimatum. Like, you could do something like that, but like, I think if you're getting up to 7 mana to cast Emergent Ultimatum, you should probably just do that instead. But it actually could be interesting to have a deck that is like, just like on the ramp plan. Like, I'm just gonna ramp, I'm gonna cast this card, and along the way, I'm going to cast these cards that will allow me to recoup value, so this won't be a huge deal. Obviously, that's going to be a little soft to some removal and, you know, discard and things like that. But that, you know, maybe potentially something. I'm going deep here. I'm going real deep. All right. I think this is a show. I think we did the thing.
We did it.
I think so.
I'm proud of us.
I am too. Yeah, I think we're good. I think like at this point there are definitely some more things I would like to play around with, but I think we need to actually get the time to play around with them. Just because there are some, I don't want to say silly cards, but like I know there are cards where it's like, you know, sacrifice 3 creatures instead of casting, you know, this 8 drop, or this costs less because it's, you know, you own a wolf or something like that. So, like, I know those cards exist. I just need to figure out what those are to you know, if that card is going to end up being broken, broken more, I guess. The beans that seem to be pretty solid already. I don't think it needs additional breaking, but it would be nice to see that card at its full power, if you will.
Okay, so this is a little bit short, so we're going to end with a question.
Okay.
You have an event this weekend, and there's no explaining your thoughts on this, only answering.
Sure.
You have to pick a deck for each format. We're going to go in order. What are you playing in Standard?
I'm playing the Esper Rafiin deck.
Okay. Pioneer.
Pioneer, I'm playing Mono Green.
Smart. Modern.
Modern, playing... I think right now I'd probably actually just play that Hardened Scales deck.
Legacy.
Legacy, we are still living the blue-black scam life.
Vintage.
Vintage, probably playing the mono-white Hate Bears deck.
CDH.
If I had to win the event, I'm probably playing Tivit.
Okay.
How about you?
Standard. Yeoman 5 has been playing a fight rigging deck. I'm blindly putting my faith in this man and copying him. Pioneer. I'm trying to win. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, am I trying to win or is this like an SCG? Because I didn't actually establish that.
It can be an SCG. Yeah, it's an SCG. The stakes are high, but not that high.
Okay. I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to play the Vanifar deck. It's probably a mistake. I would tell other people to play green. Modern, I am playing Titan Shift. Legacy. I mean, I literally am playing the blue-green beans deck this weekend.
yeah, true.
If I'm trying to win, I'm playing Initiative again, I think. Vintage. I don't know. Probably something with Tinker because, and then CDH. I'm playing. I'm going with Keenan.
Yeah, that's actually a deck that I'm going to have proxied up because I think it's a very powerful deck and makes a lot of sense for people to practice against, so I'm gonna bite the bullet, get that deck proxied up and have it ready to go at any given point, just in case. One more thing, to quote Uncle. Could we play beans with Valimuchus Lorehold?
That seems like unnecessary.
Does it? Man. Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah. Huh.
I'm thinking.
What about with Magma Opus and Torrential Gearhawk?
That's not bad. I could see that. I was about to say Bring to Light and Valky. I think
we are literally doing that already.
Yeah, we're already doing that. So mine's a lot less original. That one is nice. And I have seen people doing the stuff with the miracles, and like I get that, but like I'm not trying to cast Vanishment. That just seems questionable.
Oh, those are in the mail. I'm casting them. I actually don't remember what I bounced, but I bounced something, and then my opponent died because I bounced it. Therefore, cards broken.
Cards busted. Okay, so yeah, there's definitely some other ones that I'm thinking about, but we... Oh, how about... Was it? Remember Torgar, the Famine Incarnate?
No.
Man. That card never saw play. I feel like if you're going to have a card that actually takes advantage of you having a bunch of things, like, this would be the one that you just get to, like, dome people with. And you get to draw some cards, and... But I guess they need to be small things. I guess the Gear Hulk makes a lot more sense there. Man.
So you're going to keep trying to think about this, and I'm going to point out that your wife is going to yell at you if you don't wrap up the show so you can go help her.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm going to leave. You're going to leave. This was fun. I had a good time. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap. I would say Twitch, but I didn't stream last week. I'm definitely not streaming this week. This weekend, you can find me at Top Deck Games in New Jersey, playing Legacy on Saturday and Modern on Sunday, unless I am judging one or both of those days. Either way, you can find me at Top Deck Games.
You will be there.
Yes. Where can people find you?
You can find me casting Thrasta Tempest Roar, which has a cost reduction, but is a 12 drop. Maybe? No?
No.
Damn it. Okay. You can find me on Twitter at BadLuckBandit. If you're interested in finding the show, we are Depth_podcast on Twitter. Of course, we do have a Patreon as well, so if you want to support us there, that is a great way to do it. We love our patrons so much. We have the smartest, best-looking, and I'm gonna say it out loud. Their hair smells the best. I don't make the rules. I don't know. But regardless, those people are supporting us week in and week out. We appreciate them. We love them very much. And honestly, I'd like to say, like, we couldn't do it without you. I guess we could. We have been. But also,
no, we couldn't.
It's a lot easier with you. It's a lot better. On a related note, too, thanks to our patrons, we actually got more tokens in. So if you are a patron and you run across, I guess right now myself, because Mapson doesn't have them yet, but if you're going to see us in the next couple of weeks, definitely grab some tokens. We've got plenty. You know, the good old Monarch token that I have, and Mapson's generic token, which I don't know. People will ask me for, like, oh, I need Construct tokens. Like, here you go. People, it's like, I need a Merit Lage token. It's like, oh, here you go. It's like, I really need like a food token. I'm like, I don't know. Mapson's a snack. Here you go.
All perfect.
Working out pretty well. All right. Well, I guess on that note, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week.
Jeremiah taps with green, the scene sees reclaimer. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the plains. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in mock diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red LaCrevy knights clash against death shadow on the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil, an avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill, but death shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick, the bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.